You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
Show. I'm your host, Dr. Kristen Lyerly. And are you ready for a spicy conversation? All right, let's start here. Pretend you walk into your local hardware store to buy the same tools you've purchased for years, but the price tags have jumped 20, 30, maybe even 40%. Or maybe you're a farmer watching your export markets shrink while your input costs climb. Or maybe, like some of our guests today, you're a manufacturer trying to decide whether to eat the higher costs of steel and aluminum or pass them on to customers who are already stretching their budgets. These are not hypothetical scenarios. They are the daily reality for businesses and families right here in Wisconsin and across the country as tariffs are reshaping our economy in real time. So today, we're diving deep into one of the most consequential economic policies of our time. I've got business leaders from across our region joining me, some who see tariffs as essential protection for American workers and industries, and others who view them as a costly gamble with our economic future. They have different opinions, and you're going to hear them today, and I suspect it's going to be a pretty lively conversation. But what they all share is this. These business leaders are living with the consequences of tariffs every single day, and so are the people who work for them. So from the port of Green Bay to the dairy farms of Kewaunee County, from the paper mills in Kakana that built our communities to the small manufacturers that are keeping our economy humming in Manitowoc, we're going to hear directly from the people making the tough decisions, adapting their businesses, and ultimately determining whether this trade strategy helps or hurts the working families of Northeast Wisconsin and beyond. So, fellas, let's talk about what tariffs really mean when the policy papers become paychecks, price tags, and the future of our communities. I am thrilled to introduce our guests today. Sachin Shivaram, he is the CEO of the Wisconsin Aluminum Foundry. Kurt Voss, the CEO of the Amerilux family of companies. Oh, he's also the owner, I should add. And John Brogan, the CEO of the Bank of Kakana. Welcome, guys.
Thank you, Chris.
Good to be here.
All right, Sachin, it was your article that inspired this conversation, and you have shared your experience widely. I watched your clip on CNN this morning. Tell us a little bit about the work that you do at Wisconsin Aluminum Foundry. Just get a little bit of background. And then how have these tariffs, these fluctuating tariffs, affected the work that you do there?
Yeah, thank you so much for having us, Kristen. This is great. I mean, I'm looking around the table here. Clearly, our listeners don't have the benefit of seeing everybody, but you have assembled just a great group of people. You know, two friends and colleagues are here at the table who know this economy deeply and care about this community, and as do you. And so I'm just really looking forward to this conversation on such an important topic. So at our company, at Wisconsin Aluminum Foundry, we basically buy processed aluminum in the form of an ingot, and then we buy sand, and we buy other tools, and then we transform those basic raw materials into custom aluminum shapes for a wide variety of uses. So truck parts, satellite parts, engines, cookware, different things that probably many of your listeners see in their day-to-day lives, or maybe don't. You know, a lot of our things are hidden inside equipment. But the important thing about what we do is who does it. You know, we have about 1,000 employees across the northern Midwest. We're in Michigan, Indiana, Iowa, Minnesota, and obviously Wisconsin. And our people transform these raw materials that have not a whole lot of value into something very valuable. And this is what enables our company to pay a great wage. We start out at $27 an hour, defined benefit pension plan, childcare stipend, all sorts of things. We have production workers who clear six figures. Median wage is around $70,000. So these are good jobs, you know, good jobs where people work hard. They feel proud of what they do. They can touch it. And so Yeah, the reason why I'm saying all of this is because I think most people would want our types of jobs in this economy, especially with the growth of AI that is displacing all sorts of stuff. You know, I'm thinking AI will displace what we do at some point, but these are jobs that are going to exist in the economy and be able to provide these sorts of wages for a long time. And so when we think about all of this in the context of the tariffs policy, this, I think, is the one of the aims. Maybe the original aim of the tariff policy was, okay, let's protect companies like Wisconsin Aluminum Foundry to help them to grow, to be able to create more of those jobs because we want those jobs in our economy. This thinking is not bad. You know, I think it's something I would support. And that's what many business leaders probably felt when Trump was elected. And we're like, well, you know, maybe some things I agree with, some things I don't. But hey, that tariff policy, that kind of sounds like it might help us and might help this economy.
Bring good American jobs back to America.
Exactly.
Yes.
Yeah, this is something we can all agree on. Now, why I wrote an article talking about why the tariffs are not good is because of how this has actually played out in the economy. The announcement itself of the tariffs was this kind of haphazard. You know, we all saw that, you know, Trump holding a poster board with the wind blowing and like all sorts of numbers calculated that he didn't even know how were calculated.
And the calculation itself was a little mysterious and comical.
Comical, yes. And I urge your listeners to look into this. We're not going to delve into the economics of that, right? Mathematics of that right now. And then, you know, the tariffs were on, they were off, and then all sorts of other reasons for tariffs became announced. You know, we disagree with what's going on politically in Brazil. India is buying Russian oil, you know, all sorts of things. You know, and the focus on restoring great American jobs has now become the secondary, tertiary reason in some cases. And so, no surprise to anyone, the intended beneficiaries of this policy, namely, you know, for instance, Wisconsin Aluminum Foundry, are not benefiting as the president himself intended, or as most people probably had intended for this policy to. Case in point. So there, the Section 232 steel and aluminum tariffs, which now increased the tariff on aluminum imports to 50% from all nations. Now, the thing that most people don't understand about aluminum is we actually generally don't smelt primary aluminum in the United States because it's very, very expensive, energy intensive. And so for good reason, it's made in countries where energy is very, very, very cheap, like Quebec in Canada, Trinidad and Tobago, Iceland, the Middle East. It's not China, actually. So these are the places that produce the aluminum. And then most of us who use aluminum import the ingot, and then we make it into something else. Now the president has tariffed that import. And so, you know, 2 weeks ago, one of the reasons why I wrote the article is we lost an order for an American company making data center equipment in Florida. We lost that order to a Canadian foundry because Canada doesn't have this tariff mm-hmm. on their raw aluminum. So we're starting out of the gate at a disadvantage. And as a result, we're losing business. And that's just one example. But this, to me, opened up the theme of all of the unintended consequences of a haphazard rollout of an idea that maybe was good, you know, but along the way, because of the nature of the president's administration being, you know, chaotic and unfocused, has also become chaotic and unfocused, and it's not having the benefits we wanted, and it's actually having the opposite.
So it sounded good out of the gate, like it was going to help American workers and bring industry back to the U.S., but what you're actually seeing is not this.
Yeah.
Kurt, you are the owner and founder, a CEO at Amerilux Companies. You're a manufacturer as well. What has your experience been?
Well, my experience has been a little different than Sachin's. Actually, we are in the midst of starting a new business as part of our family of companies called American Polycarbonate Company, where we are reshoring something that's being done has been done overseas for decades, and in a new building in De Pere, we're part of a joint venture with a company based in Ireland. We're going to take some of their machinery that was there, and we're in the midst of installing it here in De Pere. I think listening to Sachin speak about the haphazardness and the a lot of attention in my mind is on style versus substance. And any time that you do something as dramatic as this tariff policy, there's going to be, it's not going to be a straight line from the beginning of it to, you know, getting to the goal that you're looking to accomplish. And so you do something this disruptive, there's going to be some unintended consequences. It's almost impossible to not be haphazard from my perspective. So when I look at these policies, first of all, I want to say I look at it not only from the standpoint of being an owner of a business that could be impacted, but I look at it from the standpoint of being a U.S. citizen and what's best for the country. Frankly, what's best for the country long-term is going to be in the best interest of every facet of my life, including my business life. So a lot of what Sachin described is short-term, in my view, thinking. And I still have hope. I mean, obviously, the proof will be in the pudding, but I have a lot of hope that long-term things are going to settle in and we're going to find a point of equilibrium where those of us in business can find a way to operate successfully, just like we always had, regardless of what the circumstance was. At the end of the day, there's really no reason why a Canadian company should be able to compete effectively with a company that Sachin runs. I know enough about his company and how he runs it. They should win. That's an unintended consequence. I agree that's not right. But I think that when we wake up a year from now or 2 years from now or maybe less, hopefully less, you know, a lot of these things, these intricacies of the policy will be worked out. Because even in our case, if I wanted to take a negative tack here, I could easily do that. We are actually taking equipment that is based overseas, unplugging it, Americanizing it so that it can work here in America, plugging it in here, and I've got to pay a tariff on the machinery coming over here.
So you're paying too.
I'm not happy
about for aluminum. You're paying for this equipment.
100%.
Yeah.
So I'm not happy about that. I think in the long run, though, because of what's going to happen with the economy, for instance, one of the many markets we serve is the agricultural market.
Mm-hmm. Huge, American, huge industry in Wisconsin.
Huge, obviously, yes.
Yeah.
They're at a big disadvantage as it relates to trying to sell into Canada, for example. Huge disadvantage. It's not fair. It's something that all of us have inherited from, you know, 40 years of policy that maybe at the time was good policy, but there was unintended consequences with that.
Mm-hmm.
And so to the extent that my customers can benefit to a greater degree, they're going to need more of our product.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel comfortable and confident that that's what's going to happen going forward. So I'm hopeful.
I'm glad to hear that. Hey, and John, I really want to hear from you, but here's the thing. We are stumbling into a break. But before we do that, and we'll start with you in our next segment, you're in the finance industry. Yeah. So you're not in manufacturing. It's very different for you.
It is. Yeah, it is quite different. Because you're really looking at sort of more broad global effects of what's going on in the economy at large. And I think we're still trying to figure out where exactly everything is going to land.
Mm-hmm. So much more to talk about in that vein. So we're going to take a short break, but when we come back, my local music pick for the week. And then later in the show, we're going to delve into the big questions. We've already touched on it a little bit, but do the benefits of tariffs outweigh the costs? And how do tariffs actually protect American workers? So we're talking tariffs with Sachin Shivaram, the CEO from the Wisconsin Aluminum Foundry, Kurt Voss, CEO and owner of Amerilux family of companies, and John Brogan, the CEO of the Bank of Kokana. And I'm Dr. Kristen Lierley. You're listening to the Dr. Kristen Lierley Show on WGBW, WISS, streaming on the Civic Media app, and available as a podcast on Spotify, Apple, YouTube, and everywhere.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
Welcome back to the Dr. Kristen Lierley Show. I am Dr. Kristen Lierley, and we're talking about tariffs with three CEOs who have different perspectives on this really important topic. We've got Sachin Shivaram. He is the CEO of the Wisconsin Aluminum Foundry. Kurt Voss, the CEO and owner of the Amerilux family of companies. And John Brogan, the CEO from the Bank of Kakana. And before we get back to our tariff conversation, I have to introduce the Wishbone Breakers out of Appleton. They recently performed at Mile of Music in Appleton. That was Puddles off of their most recent album, Sometimes There's a Hole in Me. And if you like them, keep listening because we're going to hear a couple more of their songs. Links to their music will always be in our show notes because we love promoting local bands and local music. So back to business, guys. John, you didn't get a chance to tell your share your perspective. You are in the financial industry. These guys are manufacturers, but you're kind of, you have a different angle on this.
Yeah, I guess the first thing I would say is that I don't think of tariffs necessarily as good or bad per se, but they're just a tool. And I think the others have also hinted at that as well. But how you use that tool really has a significant impact on its broader effect in the economy. And so I think we're still in a wait and see mode about exactly what impact all these tariffs are going to have, whether we're ultimately going to see another spike of inflation, which is something that we've been obviously monitoring very closely in the financial industry. And obviously, interest rates are one of the most important indicators of how my business operates. And so we are always mindful of some of these broader economic indicators of what's happening. Is manufacturing slowing down? Are orders slowing down? Are housing starts slowing down? So we're always trying to kind of see around the corner and try to then make bets about how the interest rate environment is going to work, which is kind of largely what financial institutions do. So I think we've been in a wait and see mode for a long time. I agree with Sachin that the part that concerns me is the rollout, the inconsistency. When you're operating in business, what you really want is to make sure that you know what's going to happen next. You can start planning for the future a year out, 2 years out, 3 years out, and know that policy is going to be the same. Well, we've been looking at just huge changes in policy from all sorts of perspectives, from the economic perspective, the implication of the tariffs, just changes in the dynamics of world policy. So all of these changes that are happening at the same time all have an impact on each other and really affect the economy at large. So something we're always really trying to focus on and make sure that we stay ahead of.
All those different moving parts.
Right.
The Federal Reserve factors into it.
Right.
The leading indicators, the lagging indicators. So I heard you say that the rollout has made it challenging to predict what's going to happen next. And that's a huge part of your industry. Kurt, I heard you say that the rollout isn't really all that hairy.
Well, I didn't necessarily say it wasn't hairy. I said that it's to be expected.
Mm.
And I think in business, whether you're in the banking business or the aluminum foundry business, there's all kinds of winds that we face all the time. And so the people that can adapt to those winds, are successful, and those that can't don't or aren't. I mean, it goes back to the tariff policy really has three positives to it, or three intentions to it. One is it raises money for the government. I mean, there was a time when we had no income tax and we lived only on tariffs. It really served as kind of a national sales tax, I guess, if you want to think of it in those terms. So, estimates now are this year alone could raise $300 billion. That's a big deal for the country.
Although, to be fair, during that time, that was a long time ago, and trade was very different back then. I mean, the world is much flatter now, and we're very much more interconnected than we were at that time.
I agree. But then you can get into go down a different rabbit hole as to whether or not, how much do we care about America? Is it America first? Are we globalists and in between? So that's a different conversation. But I agree with you. Certainly, things are a lot different today than they were in 1900 when we were living on tariffs.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing that tariffs do is they influence policy. So Trump has obviously used it as a stick to help with illegal immigration, help with the flow of fentanyl across our borders, help with some geopolitical conflicts throughout the world. Frankly, I think to the benefit of the United States of America. So I like the fact that he's using those. In fact, a lot of the uncertainty is a result of him using that those tariffs as a means of negotiation. And he talked about, you know, huge percentages and then only to come down later after he got whatever concessions he was looking for. And then, of course, the third reason is to bring back jobs to America. And if you look at the different deals that have been cut thus far, not only did we even the playing field to some degree, which hopefully will help businesses like ours and all of your customers, but, you know, in the long run, it'll help. So I just think that we have to give this these policies time.
How much time?
Well, I think, you know, Sasha and I talk every month at breakfast, right? Mm-hmm. And those conversations we've talked about, well, I'd say give it another month, give it another 2 months. Well, now we got to deal with the EU and we got to deal with the UK and we've, you know, we're close to hopefully ending the war in Ukraine. And, you know, so all of those things are a function of what the Trump administration is doing. Now, I'm not here to be Joe Republican, but I have to admit that I agree with 95% of the policies that I'm seeing. I agree that the style could be a little bit differently. I would handle things if I were in that role a little bit differently, but I'm into results. And I'm seeing results, and that's what I'm excited about.
Mm-hmm. I want to talk more about that because you just opened up a few different ways we can take this conversation. I'm really excited to come back to that, Kurt. We are talking tariffs with Sachin Shivram, the CEO of the Wisconsin Aluminum Foundry, Kurt Voss, the CEO and owner of the Amerilux family of companies, and John Brogan, the CEO from the Bank of Kokana. When we come back, do the benefits of tariffs outweigh the costs? And how are American workers protected? You're tuning into the Dr. Kristen Lierley Show. I am Dr. Kristen Lierley. We're on WGBW, WISS, the Civic Media app, and as a podcast. See you soon. Welcome back to the Dr. Kristen Lierley Show. I'm Dr. Kristen Lierley, and we're talking tariffs with business leaders from three Wisconsin-based companies. Sachin Shivram is the CEO from the Wisconsin Aluminum Foundry. Kurt Voss is the CEO and owner of the Amerilux family of companies. And John Brogan is the CEO of the Bank of Kokana. If you missed the beginning of our conversation, and this is a really good one, you can always find it wherever you get your podcasts, YouTube, Apple, Spotify, Substack, and of course, civicmedia.us. And you can always find me here every weekend streaming on the Civic Media app and broadcast on WGBW and WISS. Now, Kurt, you opened up a can of worms with the statements that you just made.
Intentionally so.
Yes. Let's get into the meat of it, Sachin.
Yeah, I mean, you know, one of the things that Curtin, so he mentioned we have breakfast every month and we talk politics. And one of the things that he and I argue about the most is, you know, on the...
Is it an argument or a discussion?
Come on.
Is it hard to differentiate?
Well, is like, how high of a bar are we going to hold this president to? And so Kurt has been, permissive with the president by saying, well, you know, the rollout isn't perfect, but, you know, we agree on the long-term aspiration. And that's interesting. Actually, among this group, I sense we do, the three of us agree on the very long term, you know, let's restore these great jobs. Medium term, do we agree on the primacy of the tariffs? We're probably all, you know, a little bit patchwork there. But where I think we disagree is on the how important the rollout itself is to the policy. And the rollout is exactly what's wrong with this tariff policy. So what sparked my interest to write that article that I wrote was I was in a meeting in Washington, D.C. with, you know, 15 industrial CEOs from some of the largest companies in America. Don't ask me why I was in that room, unclear. But I happened to, you know, was in this room as part of our trade organization. And these, you know, very important, high-profile, accomplished CEOs who lead giant manufacturing companies, all of them were like, who is he working with when he's putting together this policy? I mean, I'm not there. You know, they were saying, like, I'm not there. Our people are not there. Our trade association is not there. And it turned out it's basically Trump and Lutnick and, you know, some of his administration sitting in a room cooking up these plans, and they foist them, on America. And predictably, chaos follows, and he changes his... And so when we Kurt said this is to be expected in federal policy, I don't think it is. I mean, whether you agree or not, the Biden administration's main thing was on climate change, and they rolled out the IRA, and no one today, you may not like the policy, but no one today is saying, oh, the rules are unclear, or the implementation was bad, or nobody knows what they're doing. That is not the argument.
You're talking about the Inflation Reduction Act.
The Inflation Reduction Act, right? And I'm just taking that as an example of signature policy. And this is what we should expect of our presidents is, hey, this is a $25 trillion economy. It's not your little mom and pop amateur, fab shop. And so lives and livelihoods are at stake, right? And we expect a level of seriousness that at the very minimum matches what I bring to my own company. Now, Kurt, I'll ask you, would you roll out a new pricing policy, something like that, without involving your team, without understanding the market?
Yeah.
I mean, would you?
Well, maybe the 15 people in that room weren't happy with the tariff policy on that particular day. I don't know when that was, if that was a month or two ago. Yeah, there was a lot more uncertainty than there is today. There's a lot of really smart people, in my view, making these policies. Some people are going to be excluded.
But can you name one CEO who has said, hey, this is a great policy?
I could name a lot of my friends and business associates that are thrilled with the long-term view and what's transpired thus far. Some of the deals that have been cut. You mentioned policies and chaos. Opening up our southern border, don't you think that was pretty chaotic? Chaotic to our cities, chaotic to all elements of our healthcare system. Kristen, you can probably vouch for that. Part of the tariff policy has helped to take care of that issue that was chaos, and I'm talking absolute chaos.
Well,
so if you want to compare chaos, we can certainly do that. Now,
since you opened the door, I guess there's kind of an interesting question in the relationship between tariffs and immigration, and I guess I'm curious about if the point of tariffs, at least in part, is onshoring of jobs and kind of driving more jobs, at least from my vantage point, one of the boards that I serve on is the State Economic Development Corporation Board, and I don't know, up to the date statistics, but within the last couple of years, there were 300,000 open jobs for basically 75,000 people who actually in the workforce could go fill them. So I guess I'm curious if we really are trying to onshore these jobs and put more people in America kind of working in these great jobs, what are we going to do when we can't possibly fill them?
Well, we're going to have some sort of a comprehensive immigration system that makes sense, not one that just lets everybody in, including the bad guys.
So in the long term, I guess your view is we're gonna have to let these people in. We're just gonna have to do it in a different way.
Well, and I think in the near term, from a supply and demand standpoint, that's gonna raise wages. And Trump talks about trying to be the middle class president. That's part of his plan, and that's his ambition to raise the wages of those folks, and also incent people who are now out of the workforce to get back into the workforce because now it makes financial sense for them to do so.
Well, look, I'd like to keep a conversation, on the
tariffs. Narrow
on tariffs, and let me bring it back to that by saying that this is exactly case in point what John is raising, in that there isn't a plan. I mean, Kurt says there will be comprehensive immigration reform, yada yada. What I would expect our president to say is, look, I have a policy to reshore American jobs, and here are the multi-prongs of that plan. One element is tariffs. One element is, something, how he's going to drive economic growth. Another element is immigration. And all of that needs to work together to achieve my aim. I would expect him to do that, right? And we're dealing with the problems piecemeal when obviously you need a comprehensive solution to all of that. And so, again, I'll just point out the rollout itself is just haphazard and self-destructive.
Well, again, we all live in our own echo chambers. I've heard those things be, how would I know about that? I'm not a politician of that comprehensive plan. I know that because I listen to the different people from the administration talk about these things. Now, we could argue about how that gets delivered. You could get into the media and the fairness or unfairness and all those sorts of things. Look, I'm for as much transparency as there can be, and I'm for as much for Trump and everyone in his administration talking about all the different elements of his plan for sure, so we don't have to have these kinds of disagreements. Well, there needs to be more transparency. just generally as to what's going on in our government. I completely agree with that. That's a Democrat and Republican issue.
But, you know, there exists a system independent of the media for us to find out about what the federal government plans are. We have a congressman and we have a congressperson and we have two senators who are the emissaries, you know, from our area to the D.C. and then the opposite. And they should be able to come back and tell us, hey, I've spoken with the president. This is what we've got going on. This is the plan, right? Have any of those three people said anything? Forget Tammy Baldwin because I assume, you know, she doesn't like what the president is doing. Ron Johnson or Tony Weed? Have they told us?
I've talked to Tony Weed about this in detail.
Enlighten us. What is this plan?
Well, in fact, I was there. I was fortunate to be there. They didn't call it the State of the Union. It was the joint session of Congress speech. And it was funny that day. I just followed Tony around. And one of the meetings that he had was a group of what we would be senators or House of Representatives people from Canada. And they were coming in, making their rounds to the different people in the House of Representatives. And this was during the time where, you know, they were worried about the tariffs. They shouldn't be tariffs since they're trying to gain support. Long story short, he allowed me to sit in those meetings. And he actually called on me in one of the meetings after the Canadians had spoken. And I said, you know, you mentioned all of the work that you've done as it relates to fentanyl and, you know, halting the flow of fentanyl into the country, but you've only been doing that for about the past 30 days. Is that correct? And they said, well, yeah, and we've done a lot. And I said, well, so is it fair for me as an American citizen to be mad at my friends in Canada for not doing something sooner? And it took the threat of these huge tariffs and the chaos associated with that to get you to do something on a problem that is that important. They had to agree with that. So as it relates to Tony, I've had different conversations with him most recently last week. And he has
You're lucky that you get to have that engagement with your congressperson. But what I'm talking about is Congress and the Senate are not involved. There is no federal legislation to support tariffs. You know, if you think back to Smoot-Hawley was actually congressional action.
Yeah.
That was a bill. Okay. And so this is how government works, that whether it was the IRA or any other Smoot-Hawley, whatever you want, you got to get the representatives of the people involved in that. What we're seeing today is through executive action. So Trump just announced last week, Section 232, which are the national security oriented powers of, you know, under the Trade Expansion Act that the president is bestowed with, to take special economic action to support the national security of the country. Steel and aluminum was under that. And then he's used the same 232 privilege for a wide variety of things. Most recently, last week, for furniture.
Yeah.
Is furniture a national security? I mean, if it were a national security thing, shouldn't Congress get involved? I mean, come on.
And I think what you're saying is Congress needs to get involved to implement tariffs. That is not the duty of the executive branch, unless it's a national security
issue.
The
lack of involvement of Congress speaks to the haphazardness of this thing. It's one guy cooking up the plans in his brain.
Yeah.
And then every once in a while, he tells us about it on Truth Social.
Some of the words you use, the cooking up, that implies some idiot in the middle of the night not thinking things through. I think that's unfair. Look, one thing I want to address, you mentioned, you know, executive actions and, you know, people abusing power. There's no doubt about it that a lot of the norms and the way we used to conduct business as a government have been perverted over the years by both parties. You know, was it perverted for Joe Biden to discount or eliminate student loan debt, even after the Supreme Court twice said that it was unconstitutional for him to do that, but he still did that? I mean, that's not something that should be executive action. So my point is not to play, you know, one-upsmanship here, but it's just like, I think we agree that we got to get government back to doing what they're supposed to be doing. But everything is so hyper-politicized, we have to have more conversations like we have every month at breakfast than we're having here in the studio, and things will get better. But we can't look at these things through the echo chambers that we all live in. And that's all I would say. So you talk about executive actions, but you say nothing about executive actions when they're abused on the Democrat side. And I think we have to take a more balanced approach.
The student loan thing is important, but is not economy moving. This is fundamentally globe reshaping public policy where the people that we elect and send to Congress and the Senate are not involved in matters that, man, they really should be.
Again, talking
about... By the way, the Republican the Congress and the Senate are controlled by the president's party. So it's not like he can even say, man, these Democrats are against me.
Yeah.
It's his own party, so why not?
I would say forgiving hundreds of billions of dollars of student loan debt is a pretty big deal as it relates to inflation, as an example. So that's not a small thing. And a lot of the chaos that you talk about hasn't transpired. We haven't had chaos as it relates to inflation. We just haven't. Now, we can talk about, in my opinion, why that hasn't happened, but it hasn't happened. You know, inflation was supposed to be transitory. It wasn't. We have to challenge these thought processes and come to the truth somehow.
Well, I think part of the problem is that we also have to look at this as part of a broader timeline of policy action and interaction that happens over time.
Absolutely. And I want you to continue that thought after we come back from this break. We're talking tariffs with Sachin Shivram, CEO from the Wisconsin Aluminum Foundry, Kurt Voss, CEO and owner of the Amerilux family of companies, and John Brogan, CEO from the Bank of Kakana. I am Dr. Kristen Lierley, and you are listening to the Dr. Kristen Lierley Show.
Feels that way. It's more of a thrifted picture frame with this great.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
This is the Dr. Kristen Lierley Show. I am Dr. Kristen Lierley, and we are talking tariffs with business leaders from three Wisconsin-based companies. Sitting next to me are Sachin Shivram, the CEO of the Wisconsin Aluminum Foundry, also Kurt Voss, the CEO and owner of the Amerilux family of companies, and John Brogan, the CEO from the Bank of Kakana. We're going to pick it up right where we left off. John, you are the person who is in the finance business. Talk to us about inflation and interest rates and all those things that are really hurting consumers' pocketbooks right now.
Yeah, obviously inflation has been just a significant issue for the last, several years. And really this is part of a broader, I was kind of talking before the break about these broader cycles, because some of this goes, back to really 2008 and the financial crisis and all of the money that we had to pump into the economy in order to kind of stave that off. And really that process of putting a lot of money into the economy has never really worked itself out, because then we had COVID, which kind of forced us to stop. So we've had a lot of stops and starts kind of along the way that have really affected fiscal policy. Overall, I think the Fed has done a pretty good job of kind of fighting inflation and kind of following its mandate of both maintaining maximum employment while at the same time trying to keep inflation down. I think even though I think most pundits now, like the by and large, most of the economists think that rates are going to go down, in part because we're seeing softening in the jobs numbers, and so we would expect to see that come down. But the problem is that the expectation that you bring rates down kind of coincides with a decrease in the overall economic performance of the country. The GDP kind of cools off a little bit. And I think we had maybe a very alarming situation when within the last couple of weeks, President Trump fired the head of the Bureau of Labor Statistics for reporting just truthful information about what was going on
in the
labor force.
Yes. That's the same person that was off by a million jobs in 2000 or last year.
So yes, it's the data as collected as we collected, and we've had a process for collecting it.
Revisions happen in labor statistics always. Every announcement. I mean, I follow.
But not that big.
None of us have the data offhand, but maybe your listeners can look into this. I mean, there are, in every announcement, there are always revisions about the previous quarters. But I think John opened up a very important topic that hopefully, we have enough time to get into the detail that matters here. But if you listen to what Jerome Powell said last week, he said that— Chairman of the Fed. He said that, they're looking at downward revisions in interest rates specifically because of risks to the labor market, which means the economy is not good. And at a time when inflation is well above the Fed has a target of 2%. Everybody wants to get to 2% inflation, but we're at 3% right now. And so even at a time when the Fed is not hitting its goals, we're going to be talking about interest rate cuts because of the dual mandate of the Fed, which is to, you know, full employment and low inflation. Which opens up, you know, the scary prospect of, you know, we could end up in a stagflationary economy.
Yes.
Where, you know, we're seeing, you know, reduced jobs and then higher inflation. And now, Kurt, you said in our previous segment, you said that, well, none of this has happened yet. And this is the key point, is yet. You know, I mean, there are long and variable lags on, you know, fiscal policy, on interest rates and everything. We will see that. I think the jobs numbers, so they come out for your listeners. They should pay attention next week, Friday at 7:30 a.m. Central, I believe, is when the jobs numbers come out.
Every month, the jobs numbers come out, and they are publicly discoverable. So if you're curious, you can Google them.
Go see that. And I'm guessing it'll be weak, you know, because that's the way the economy is headed. And so, which begs the point, which is, you know, if Trump's policies on tariffs and everything were so great, right, why would he be badgering the Fed to reduce interest rates? Because jobs are weak. Shouldn't jobs be great, and shouldn't he be able to...
Well, our foreign competitors have decreased rates 7 times since the last time we decreased our rates. That's why he's saying that. I agree with John, though. The long term is what we really have to look at. And too much is about the headlines and this fear. I don't operate my businesses from the standpoint of fear. I look back, or I look at the facts and try to create a plan to mitigate whatever challenges are out there in the marketplace. I'm sure you do the same thing. But yet the headlines are all, we're going to have stagflation. Inflation is going to be way up because of tariffs. It's way more nuanced than that, because there's a lot of things that influence the inflation rate outside of tariff policy. Only about 14% of the goods and services that we consume as Americans come from foreign sources. So yes, obviously, if you put a tariff on it, it's like a tax. And to the extent that it gets passed on to the consumer, it's going to raise prices and thereby raise inflation. But it's a one-time hit. Inflation is caused by one thing, increasing the money supply. That's the only thing that causes inflation. Now, there's a lot of symptoms of inflation.
Actually, I don't. That's not entirely true, because, right, there's a demand side to the equation, too. It's just, yeah, but it's not just the supply of the dollars.
But if you have X amount of dollars to consume products and you increase that, you're going to have more dollars chasing that same amount of goods. Conversely, if it goes the other way, you're going to have less dollars. So eventually people are going to not have enough money. If prices raise and you don't increase the money supply, over time, they're going to buy less because they can't afford it. And the other thing is going to happen.
Let's not get into the weeds of inflation, but let's you know, bring it back to our original point here, which, you know, I think it's a little callous of you to say, well, you know, long term, you know, it's going to work. Because you know, you have a long term plan and you'll be fine. When, you know, I'm thinking the majority of Kristen's listeners, also people in the economy, are living much more short term, right? And if this policy doesn't work now or in the next couple months, there's like real pain in the economy. And this is what we're trying to
do. It particularly hits low income people, because most of those products that are coming in from China, et cetera, are going to be the things that they're trying to acquire.
And that is the perfect note to end on today. This has gone so fast, you guys.
Not enough time,
but we can do it again, because this is going to keep happening.
I want to keep talking to these guys after we sign off.
You do. Thank you all for taking time out of your incredibly busy days. Sachin Shivaram, the CEO from the Wisconsin Aluminum Foundry. Kurt Voss, CEO and owner of the Amerilux family of companies. John Brogan, CEO from the Bank of Kakana. We've been talking about tariffs, and it has been a very engaging conversation. So friends, thank you for listening. Again, this is Dr. Kristen Lierley. You're listening to the Dr. Kristen Lierley Show. Catch me on all the socials. Let me know what you thought about our conversation, and we'll see you next time.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.